הנה לא ינום ולא ישן, לא ינום ולא
ישן. A Psalm of David. This is Sarah Dunordwell, and this is The Bardcast, where we have an opportunity to experience a bit of Bard School online, or on air, I should say. And your poems are a key part of the programme, because what I'm hoping to do in the tradition of the ancient bards of Ireland, who were called to speak truth to the king without fear and to entertain everyone from the peasant to the king, as well as instruct the young. They were called to do that as well, is to encourage people to write and create in the light of their faith and to have confidence in the things that they're writing and producing, and that it will have value for other people, perhaps far beyond what you would actually imagine. Because, you know, when we were at school, we were often made to feel that our work was not of the best. I remember once writing a science fiction story in response to an essay question and having the teacher walk around the classroom holding it in the air saying, "Who wrote this stupid story?" It's not very encouraging, is it? So one of my passions in life is to make people realise the value of what they're creating and seeing and experiencing. And then to help them to maybe form it, perhaps anew sometimes, very often, you know, it's first thought, right thought, or just to reawaken an old longing to write songs or poems or even plays or films. One of my godson's sisters is now working in film, and, you know, she's up for an award. And I remember when she was tiny, you know, she was running around the house making little films, short films, moving her toys around, doing kind of like stop motion animation with this phone that her dad had lent her. You know, because children are free, they don't mind what people think, you know, until people start interfering with them. And it's to return to that childlike joy of learning things off by heart, as the homeschooling children in Walsingham definitely do. And you'll be hearing from one of them on this programme, and just sharing things with each other in intimate spaces. And it's there you learn that you have value and that you have value to share with the wider world, if that's ever necessary. Anyway, so this is The Bardcast, and I'm Sarah Dunordwell, a bard with a bard school. So the other day I had the great good fortune to go to a conference in Oxford called Convergence, and there I bumped into a wonderful, I think he was a Franciscan, who I'd seen many years before in Oxford at a Tolkien conference, and I was so pleased to see him because I have his lectures on my laptop, and I love to look at them again. He has a fantastic capacity to capture the beauty of the unseen things. And I'm going to just begin today's Bardcast with a quotation from a lecture he gave in 2007, actually. If you subscribe to academia.eu, you can see all of his lectures. And what I'm going to do is I'm starting a Substack called The Bard Stack, just to make life easy. And the show notes and things will be on there. So if you'd like to take a look, I'll link to his things. And I'll let you know when that's ready. Hopefully that'll be ready by the time the next Bardcast happens in a couple of weeks. Because I think people like to read the poems again. They like to follow through on the links. Anyway, here is this wonderful quote from Brother Giuliano. "The world in its grandeur is full of a spiritual radiance for which we have neither name nor concept. But there is a perception of the glory that comes to us at certain moments. Awe is the awareness of transcendent meaning. We sense that the glory is not an exception, though, but rather an aura lies about all being. It is the spiritual setting of reality. We sense that we should not be measuring meaning in terms of our own mind. And so we learn to sense a meaning infinitely greater than ourselves. Well, that is a beautiful summary of what I've been trying to say in other terms throughout the Bardcasts, I think. When I run my writing courses called Write in the Light, they are really helping to re-establish, first and foremost, the context for our creative work, the source of our creative work, and its telos. In other words, its end point, its meaning, its horizon, or if you like, orientation, to reclaim that word from the contemporary culture. And do you remember that the word prompt, the writing prompt from the last Bardcast, number 14, was to return in your mind to a time when some aspect of the faith landed with you, sort of made sense in a new way, or perhaps made sense for the first time, and you just go back in your mind and relate that moment, noticing the details and sharing the experience, because that's how we pass on the faith. Now, wonderfully, Valerie, who has been at Write in the Light courses in the past, and I have read one or two poems of hers before, sent me a wonderful response to this prompt. And she also sent me some notes on Signal about what her writing practice means to her now. And I'm going to read out her message to me first before reading her poem, because I want you to sort of capture what it is she's trying to do and why writing poetry is a spiritual practice. So this is what she says. Writing this way is for me a personal prayer practice, a way of reflecting on how the gospel message lives in the details of my life experiences in different circumstances. In this case, the poem I'm about to share with you, the poem is about my noticing of a father and son's love, which took place at Mass, an Easter Mass, and which for me was charged with a sacramentality and therefore had many layers of meaning. And she continues with her message, but I've also written this way about my sightings of trust, mercy or love and beauty that I've noticed in different settings, for example, on the streets of London or in parks or in the countryside. So the fact that she is writing and likes to write when she gets home means that she's looking at the world differently. She's looking to perceive what lies behind things, and it's opening her heart and her eyes to the things around her as she develops a poet's eye. And another of the fruits of this, she continues to describe. Rediscovering my childhood sense of wonder and hope is important to me, and my poems are often reflections on memories, both recent and past. I feel very happy if the poems invoke similar feelings in other people. You know, we are surrounded by such a lot of depressing and dangerous news, perhaps, and it's just good to remember, as we did in the last Bardcast too, that what goes on within our hearts is extremely important to God and is every bit as real, if not more real, than some of the things that are reported. Valerie herself became a Catholic only a few years ago, and she had come from a culture that had immersed her in a real ideological way of thinking. And even the artwork that she was being encouraged to create, she mentions to me, was all about looking out for ways in which you are oppressed. But she says that she got rather tired of this. And she says, the practice I have now of looking out for visible signs of love between people is springing from the fact that I'm looking for the link between our human love and God's divine love, and I want my poems to give thanks and praise for it. And she says it's a countercultural stance on her part, and I agree. She says, I no longer want to be cynical. I no longer want to focus on human beings just oppressing each other. It might be important to look at that sometimes, but it's not, doesn't have to fill our whole field of vision. She says, I want to be a witness to human love, which is, after all, given to us by God. I want my poems to be to put a spotlight on these simple loving gestures that are so easily ignored, because they are part of this much bigger and more wonderful sacred thing. And then she finishes her message, must go to mass, and signs off. So I'm now going to let you listen to the poem that is one of many poems she's been writing recently, and it's called Held, and it took place at the Easter Mass, as this broadcast is going out in the season of the resurrection.
Held. Easter Mass at the cathedral was packed, with all 3,000 seats filled, so that the faithful spilled out into the side chapels, and many, like me, stood at the back. Among us, I noticed a man holding a baby, which must have been crying, I guess. The boy was straddled on his father's hip and ample belly, being soothed by a gentle swaying that was woven in with the rise and fall of polyphonic breath, the choirs singing, the cantors intoning, the people's soulful calling back. The infant's tears had long gone, as had my fractious mood, because these strangers had shone out to me, and I had been drawn into their reverie as the father kissed and nuzzled the soft neck and ears of his baby with the rough, hairy face of an ordinary man. They were so in tune with one another as they floated together on a sea of liturgy, and a great swell of gratitude moved and carried me with them and the whole congregation, as clouds of incense made visible by sunbeams drifted by. Why then did I doubt and wonder, would their love last? Trust is a fragile thing, and yet, I trust what I saw, and must trust more in Christ, so that even when I cannot see love in all its reality, I will still remember he is here with us, in our very flesh, and this can never be undone.
Now, the context of this broadcast going out is that there's quite a lot of, as I mentioned, difficult and perhaps alarming news going on in the world. But I couldn't help remembering that when I was my godson's age, he was 6 years old yesterday, and we had a wonderful birthday party for him, and it was a very joyful day. There was some government advice handed out when I was about six, I think, that we had to, if there was a nuclear attack, we had to kind of hide under the table and, you know, put some sheltering around the table. And we thought, yeah, that's really going to help. But, of course, this is a highly serious subject. And I wanted to turn now to something else that I learnt at this beautiful Oxford conference called Convergence that Brother Giuliano was attending. And it was a fantastic talk, an exhibition about an amazing convert to Catholicism called Takashi Nagai. That's T-A-K-A-S-H-I Nagai, N-A-G-A-I. And he grew up in a Shinto family, though he himself declared himself to be an atheist. But he encountered the hidden Christians in Japan, and they're called the Urukami. And the Urukami live in a particular part of Japan near Nagasaki, where the atomic bomb fell. And this is what I'm going to be telling you about, what happened to his life when the atomic bomb fell. And these Christians had been persecuted, and they lived for 250 years in this sort of interior exile, really, and they had no priests, but they really kept the faith. And he met a young woman from this community who helped him to see life differently, and she totally inspired him with her purity of life, her singular gaze on the world. And he became a Catholic. He researched radiology and, alas, got leukemia. He really wanted to help people, and he became a doctor. But then, of course, the bomb fell on Nagasaki and everything was destroyed. And he lost his wife. All that remained as evidence of her life was this melted rosary that he went back and found. So he lost everything, the city, his friends. Japan lost the war, he lost his work, he lost his health, he lost his colleagues, and he was confined to bed because of his leukemia. But the reason I'm telling you this story is not just to depress you. It's because he then started to write books, and he also did the most beautiful calligraphy, which you should take a look at because it's inspiring just to behold. The books became extraordinarily famous. He became extraordinarily famous because he brought hope and joy to Nagasaki. How did he do that? Well, he recounts that when he went to Midnight Mass, this was before he became a Catholic, he said, "I felt the presence of someone so close to me that I didn't yet know." And this was the beginning of his realization that there was more to the world than the world he lived in. And I'm going to quote now from one particular translation of his book. Now, did it come from the Bells of Nagasaki? I'm not sure. I'll have to check that at the end. But it's very, very beautiful what he's saying. And it is just so inspiring when you think that he's writing this in the midst of a nuclear wasteland. Everything that used to be alive was vanished away. Everything was nothing but a mantle of white ash. My beloved wife was dead. My home and all my possessions had been reduced to ashes. My health was already failing, and I knew that soon I would not be able to work. All was lost. And yet, as my gaze wandered over the boundless land, I discovered with surprise that within myself I felt neither regret nor sadness for having lost everything. When I realized that what I needed to seek was something that never dies, a new and great hope settled within my heart. I was beginning a new life. The first thing I think when I wake up is that I'm happy. We should let the poet's attentive and admiring gaze delve beneath the surface and discern the beauty that lies hidden in all things. We should turn our lives into poetry and allow that beauty to shape our every action and thought. I have finally reached within me this new horizon. A child's heart is beating within my breast. The life of a new day awaits me. True joy, the audacity of this heart that every morning sets to work again. So that was a quotation from the writings of Takashi Nagai, who was writing from his bed where he had leukemia and he was surrounded by the nuclear wasteland of his once existing city of Nagasaki. And there is a remarkable quote that I think sums up some of the fruits of his life and attitude and faith, which is that, I don't know if this is entirely true, but it's a catchphrase apparently, that Hiroshima rages and Nagasaki prays. Because he had a great effect on the city. Because of this great supernatural hope that he had within him, he went and built a hut in the middle of that boundless white mantle of ash that was Nagasaki, and he raised his two children in that hut. He started to write. He helped people as a doctor. He did what he could. He carried on his studies using instruments that had survived the blast. And you can see photographs of him doing this online. I mean, do the research. Remember our creative process? Research, receive, respond. He actually ended up making a lot of money from his books. And with that money, he himself remained in abject poverty. But he spent it on orphanages and hospitals, and he planted 1,000 cherry trees. So I hope you enjoy exploring the organisation Amici Nagai and the wonderful information you can see online. I know that Radio Maria attended the Conversions Conference, so it's highly possible that you have a talk on him already on Radio Maria podcasts somewhere. But if you are ever feeling a bit down or a bit alarmed, go and explore his life and writings. And this is the great gift of the saints. I'm sure he will be declared a saint sometime. I believe his process is ongoing. Because these are people who respond to reality itself rather than the noise of passing events. Not that they don't take the world seriously, but they take the whole of it seriously, and they're rooted in supernatural hope, and therefore they live with love and supernatural joy. Not that they feel joyful all the time, obviously. Sorrow and sadness play a huge part in all of our lives, and that's why the Rosary is such an astonishing prayer. Mysteries of joy, mysteries of sorrow, mysteries of light, mysteries of glory. This is the extraordinary poetry of our faith. So I want to do a poem for mine now that's very short. In fact, I want to do two. One, really, to honour Takashi Nagai, because I think, I wrote it long before I heard about him, but I think he exemplifies what it's about. And it's called, very short, and it's called Warrior. In Asia, warriors do calligraphy. They know that beauty is an act of war, a great assault against the darkness of impenetrability, against the chaos and the tearing of the word. And here in Europe also, when the spiritual warriors held the quill and with each stroke marked out the place where light could dwell, we feel the focus of the human heart with laser reverence marking out the path. And you can actually see pictures of him looking through, you know, microscopes and different instruments, looking for the beauty that underlies all things. And he crosses the worlds of science and arts and, you know, like urban regeneration. And this is what creativity is. It isn't just the arts. It's everything that contemplates the world and responds to what it finds there. It's the creative response to human life in its supernatural dimension, rooted and incarnated. You know, what I love about the ending of the poem that Valerie wrote, this cannot be unmade. It was a terrific ending to a poem. And a poem, when it really works, it lands with you, and there's a silence, a space created for contemplation at the end of it. Now, here we have another of my favourite poets who nobody thinks is a poet, but he is. Excuse me for my little personal obsessions, but Pope Benedict the 16th Emeritus. If you just put different line endings on his paragraphs, it's a poem. Seriously, he is a spiritual genius and also has such a way with words. And I'm going to quote from his book because he is commenting on these words of Jesus. Mark 13, 31. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my word will not pass away. And this is what Pope Benedict says. The word, which seems almost nothing in comparison to the mighty power of the immeasurable material cosmos, like a fleeting breath against the silent grandeur of the universe, the word is more real and more lasting than the entire material world. The Word is the true dependable reality, the solid ground on which we can stand, which holds firm even when the sun goes dark and the firmament disintegrates. The cosmic elements pass away. The Word of Jesus is the true firmament, beneath which we can stand and remain. That's incredible, isn't it? I just love it. I'm going to read that last bit again. The Word is the true dependable reality, the solid ground on which we can stand, which holds firm even when the sun goes dark and the firmament disintegrates. The cosmic elements pass away. The Word of Jesus is the true firmament, beneath which we can stand and remain. And so when I'm giving you these ideas, these are within the context of this program, the good soil within which to plant your intention to contemplate your life and your experience of these words. Are they true? Are they true for you? Was there ever a moment when you thought, yes, that is true? This too will pass, but that will not pass. And that's the difference, in a way, isn't it, between the Eastern way of thinking and what Takashi Nagai eventually found and moved away from his Shinto past. Because although the culture was full of the wisdom of this too will pass, never mind, it all goes on, appreciate the beauty, blah, 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 he knew that he had to look for something that never dies, that never passes away. And that is what we have found, but we can forget. And the whole Jewish way of thinking is all about remember. Remember the works of the Lord. Remember the miracles of the Lord. Remember what he's said to you. Remember that he's there. You listen and tell the story to your children. And our Jewish brothers and sisters will be celebrating Passover. And the children have to respond to the questions within that, the Passover Seder. They have to remember, they have to know what to say. So, how do we remember to keep beauty alive in our hearts? As Pope Benedict says, the gospel stretches our categories but does not take us into abstraction. It changes the context of our concrete actions in a truly personal way. Personal, personal, personal. This is the point that Pope St. John Paul II was always making. Personalism, the human person is important. Your experience, your individual experience, totally unique, is important. That's why your songs, your poems, your sense of responsibility, your direct action in the world that improves that situation in your corner of the world makes all the difference. So I'm going to do another poem now, actually, before I set you a little task. And I'm also going to share you one other lovely thing from Walsingham. So keeping beauty alive in our hearts, I know sometimes that I'll get a memory of some gorgeous thing that happened in the past. And I think, oh, I don't want to forget that. I must write it down. And it has a sense of sort of continuing to exist. Then I remembered someone once said, every hour is sealed for eternity. Does anyone know who said that? Because I don't know, but I liked it. It's sort of exciting, but also, well, it makes one responsible, doesn't it? Wow, every hour I live is sealed for eternity. And it doesn't go away. But that can be a happy thought. Especially when we've had beautiful times that seem to become a place of goodly refuge as we remember how good things can be. So I'm going to read you this poem now that I wrote about remembering a really happy time in Scotland when I was a child. And I describe it in the form of standing on the shore looking back, because they say that the artist is often a liminal person, which means on the shoreline, between time and eternity, between matter and spirit, between past and future. So here's the poem. Where do they live? The memories of past happiness. I stand on their shimmering shore, like a tourist from another time and space, my ship moored gently at the stone quay, and my heart astounded as I dare to gaze from the harbour wall. The mirage lifts, and you are all still there. And I amongst you, young and laughing, we were so free. Look at us, clambering over rocks on the Carrick shore, sand and silver light on the stippled tide. Islands in the sea emerge and we run together like the Israelites on dry land in a window of time. There we gather freshwater pearls, or so we called them, till the tide returning we jump up with swimsuits and digestive biscuits, cheese and hands all covered in wet sand, but we wash our higgledy-piggledy pearls in a plastic bucket and chase the tide, ankle deep now, back to the mainland. And the silver sun, still tinted gold, fades now as my boat rope tugs in my hand. It is time to return with that bright netted world alive in my heart and a new cargo of pearls without price. I was so happy when I'd finished writing that poem. It, for me, was so much more real than the photographs, faded 1975 look photos in one of those, you know, those plastic cubes where we used to keep photos. I loved mine. Mine was almost totally faded. But the writing of the poem seems to make it live in your heart even more. And it tastes of that which is real forever, of that which does not die, because these experiences, I think, they are in God. Because after all, as my friend Father Hugh McKenzie is always saying, our environment is God. In other words, God is our environment, not nature, that is part of our environment, but God is our environment. Now, I just wanted to remind you of something too, that if you want to have lovely things live in your heart, whether it's prayers or scriptures or poems or stories, it's great to learn them off by heart. When children are young and they're encouraged to do this a lot, they find it very, very easy. And so after my godson Isidore's gorgeous birthday breakfast, where his mum had put up the bunting and his mum and dad had bought him this lovely trumpet, you should have seen the joy on his face. And he could get great notes out of it straight away. It was amazing. And we did our Auxilium Christianarum prayers after breakfast. And he just came out with the August Queen prayer. I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. Did you learn that off by heart? And he says, well, I just know it. Anyway, I said, will you read it for people on Radio Maria? So anyway, actually, he didn't read it. He just recited it. And here it is. And the reason why I think it's a good and appropriate prayer for this moment is that there was a priest who was concerned with the state of the world, and he was praying to Our Lady and saying to Our Lady, you know, you're the Queen of the Angels, why don't you send more angels down to help us? And she says, well, I will if you ask, you know. And it was she who dictated this prayer for him to say. So, you know, this is written by Our Lady and recited by my godson, so I hope you enjoy it. And and that we all learn to develop a sense of not only the need to keep asking for angels to come and help us in our present world, but that we listen so attentively that things enter our heart and stay there. My friend Alice was telling me that her parish priest, Father David, was telling them that in Ireland, you know, in the old days, a storyteller would tell a tale and the listeners would immediately be able to recite it in its entirety, having heard it once. And I think this is a gift we need to recapture. So I would encourage you this week to learn something beautiful off by heart, whether it is a scripture or a poem or a prayer, and to enjoy having it live within you. And you'll find it perhaps easier than you think once you've done it a few times. And send me a WhatsApp of it and maybe we can play these treasured words. And also, I encourage you to continue this idea of capturing an experience of the faith landing in a fresh way that reveals an aspect of its beauty and truth and goodness to you. And as Valerie was saying in one of her other messages to me, she said, I'm not even sure if what I've written is a poem. I mean, this semi-narrative style. And I encourage her and say, it is. It's beautiful and it's landing. And what's very interesting, we can do another programme in future about the process of editing these poems afterwards, because it's very dangerous to over-edit sometimes, because people tend to go, what I was trying to say was this, so I'll just say that. Or I want to make this bit a bit more inclusive, so I'll take out the blue eyes and just make them, no, I'll just miss it out altogether. And it's like, no, no, no. Keep it real, keep it specific, keep it personal, because that's what's going to speak to people. So I'm going to leave you with my lovely godson. You can tell I'm rather proud of him. Praying the August Queen Prayer. And then we will close.
August Queen of the Heavens, Heavenly Sovereign of the Angels, thou who from the beginning hast received from God the power and the mission to crush the head of Satan, we humbly beseech thee to send thy holy legions so that under thy command and through thy power they may pursue the demons and combat them everywhere, suppress their boldness and drive them back into the abyss. O good and tender mother, thou wilt always be our love and hope. O divine mother, send thy holy angels to defend us and to drive far away from us the cruel enemy. Holy angels and archangels, defend us, guard us. Amen.
So, just to repeat again, the prompt is to learn a beautiful thing off by heart and send it to me by WhatsApp. And you can, might be the last paragraph of Middlemarch, or it might be a part of Eucharistic prayer too, whatever you love. And if it's an inner inspiration, it might just inspire others. Or you can write something that expresses a moment where the faith landed with you, or the radiance and beauty of the world landed with you, as in that beautiful quote by the Franciscan priest that we opened with. You have been listening to the podcast. I am Sarah de Nordwall, and I like to bring poems, both old and brand new, to the cutting edge of contemporary culture, because the cutting edge is grace. Pope St. John Paul II, pray for us. Our Lady, Queen of the Angels, pray for us.
In eloianum veloishan, loianum veloishan.
A Psalm of David. Behold, he neither sleeps nor slumbers, the guardian of Israel.
This was a Radio Maria podcast. If you enjoyed it, do please click like and subscribe on your podcast provider, or leave us a review. Every bit of feedback helps increase our visibility and allows us to reach more people with the message of Christ's saving truth. And if you don't already, you can listen to Radio Maria live, either online or on DAB in selected regions of the UK. We'd love for you to call in live and be part of the conversation. See our website, radiomariaengland.uk, for more details and a full schedule of programmes. And do please consider making a donation so that we can keep making more programmes like this. We are completely dependent upon the generosity of our listeners.